you please, won't you please, please won't you be my neighbor?
Good to see you, neighbor. I just could not do a cardigan vest, though. It just does not work for me. Hey, welcome all of our campuses. Can we make noise for everybody joining us all across Silicon Valley? We're pumped you're here for a brand new teaching series, and we're going to have a lot of fun the next few weeks. So a little while ago, Stacy and I, we were trying to get more healthy physically. We already work out a lot, but we realized we weren't getting as much traction as we wanted to. So we heard that there was somebody from our church who's a nutritionist. And so we asked her to help us, and she said, the thing you got to do, I can't sit while I speak. So she said, the thing you got to do is send me everything, pictures of everything that you eat for like 3 weeks, and then I can tell you why you're struggling to lose weight. And I'm like, man, that's weird. If you want to feel exposed, like sign up to send everything you eat for 3 weeks. And one of the things she said to us was, whenever you eat, one of the most important parts of it is to actually read the label. Can we all say that together? Read the label. Because sometimes on labels there's weird stuff. Like, so these are Cheetos, hot Cheetos. How many like Cheetos? All three of our campuses. Look around. Okay, way too many people in this service at least. So there's stuff in here like, listen to these ingredients. Enriched cornmeal, which, you know, if you're from Iowa, doesn't sound too bad, but you got things like ferrosulfate, you know, you want to put some sulfate down in your throat, esophagus, niacin, thiamine mononitrate, sounds like something you'd make a bomb with, riboflavin, folic acid, vegetable oil, maltodextrin, sounds good, monosodium glutamate. I mean, this is stuff like you get the, you know, you get the buildup off of your battery on your car off of it with like the ingredients of this. You can light a Cheeto on fire and it will burn for days. It's like, that's what's on the inside. So she said, like, when you read the label, you know what's on the inside based upon the ingredients that are on the label. You should avoid certain things because of what you see when you read the label. And I started thinking about how a lot of us, if we're followers of Jesus, we already wear a label that people think of when they think of the message of Jesus or the church. There are all these associations. Mahatma Gandhi said one time, he said, I would be a Christian if it weren't for, I would be a follower of Christ if it weren't for Christians. So one time he had an experience where he went to a church, they wouldn't let him in because he wasn't in the right caste. And he walked away and said, you know what, I would follow the message of Jesus, but not the people of Jesus. And it's amazing how oftentimes Christians in our society, they have a label. Dave Kinneman wrote a book, it was called Unchristian, and it was the label that people have when they think or they associate Christians with these words, six of them. Number one, hypocritical. Don't try to write them down, I'm gonna go way too fast, you won't be able to get them. Number one, hypocritical. Number two, too convert focused. You know what I'm talking about. This is a guy that every time you talk to him, he's trying to get you to pray the sinner's prayer. And like you're a notch on his belt, he's going to get an extra stripe with his club that just sent him out to convert you. So this two convert focus. Number three, anti-homosexual, which is basically against the LGBT community. Number four, sheltered. Number five, too political. And number six, judgmental. This is a label. If you're a Christian, this is you already are behind when you try to go to share God's love with somebody. You got to overcome this. And from the very beginning, we said, you know what? We are going to be different as a church. And we're going to do everything that we can to change the label of the message of Christians or the thing that people think of when they think of Christians. Our vision from the very beginning was to be the kind of church that if we ever left the community would not only notice that we were gone, but they would care that we were absent from the community. That's the vision that we really started our church with. So we began, when we started, we contacted Santa Clara, which is where we began the church. And we said, hey, we see that you have this art and wine festival coming up. There were three families at the time. And we hadn't even launched the church about 10 years ago. We said, hey, we see that you have this art and wine festival coming up. Could we actually serve at the event? Well, they had never had a church ever ask them if they could serve at the event. They didn't know what to do with us. So they passed us around from department to department to department. And finally, this one lady by the name of Jen said, hey, I'll take them. I'll take this group. Anybody wants to serve, they can come. So we went and we served at the Santa Clara Art and Wine Festival back in 2008. And for many years now, for a decade, we have been entrenched in our community, loving, serving, praying, advocating for our community. That vision, I want you to see, that vision that we had from the very beginning as a church has now come to fruition. It's happening. In fact, if you fast forward another decade to today, Justin Imamura, who's a part of our church, got a vision from God to start a group called the Trash Punks. And as a result of their work, we have picked up now thousands of pounds of trash in our city. And we are, you can clap for that, yes. And we are now recognized by the mayor of our city. I asked him this week to give us a quote just of what he thinks of when he thinks of Echo Church. And it says this: our efforts to beautify San Jose critically depend on the support of our neighbors and partners like Echo Church and the Trash Punks. Their work and their success is inspiring our neighbors to get involved. It has made it possible to remove thousands of pounds of trash from our city streets and continues to fuel our drive to beautify our city. San Jose's mayor, Mayor Sam Liccardo. How awesome is that? See, the label has been changed. And now there's a reputation because of the love that is echoing from our church. People know, they see that the church is different. That's awesome. We need to celebrate that part of our story. But as I was praying and processing through this series, that really is a four-week vision series for us, I believe that there is a part of the equation that is still missing for us. And I think that there's a foundation that if we're not careful, that if this foundation is not built, we can be out in our community doing all these incredible things, but when people get close, they realize that what they see on the outside is not matching what's on the inside. We've changed the label. I was going to call the message today, change the label. Well, the label's changed. And what if you got a new label, but the stuff that's on the inside when you get close is not what you thought it would be based upon the label? Let me explain it like this. How many of you like kombucha juice, just out of curiosity? All the 27-year-olds, raise their hands. Well, kombucha juice is amazing. And let me tell you a little bit about it. It's unbelievable. So it's supposed to help with digestion. So if you have like intestinal issues, you should go out after this service and get yourself some kombucha juice. I've been here at the Sunnyvale campus. There might be some kombucha juice today. So if you live in Sunnyvale and you attend the North San Jose campus, you can go over there after the service and actually get some of their kombucha juice and then start attending that campus in the community where you live next week. It'd be awesome. A little shameless plug for multiple campuses. But kombucha juice has a lot of advantages to it. There's probiotics in here, which means it helps your digestive tract. It even is believed that it might help cure cancer. That's what they're saying. It also helps align your eyebrows when they're out of alignment from one another. It increases your net worth. It makes you slightly more attractive when you drink it and may even result in you finding a spouse or your current spouse getting pregnant because certain things happen because you drank kombucha juice. It's unbelievable. How many want to drink it now? It's amazing. Well, somebody doesn't want to have kids. They said, I'm not drinking that. But you know, there's certain, this is lemon ginger, and it's like, it's disgusting. It's like you took a root from the ground and sucked on it for 15 minutes. That's what it tastes like. And I did it last service. It just sits in your mouth. What am I saying? My point is, I don't care how good kombucha juice is for me. If it tastes nasty when I sip it, I'm not taking another sip of it, right? So you need some kombucha that's more like this stuff right here. This is pineapple peach. It's really good. And it tastes nice, like heals my gut, and it tastes good. That's what I want right there. See, some of us, when it comes to our faith, in a lot of churches, like you get close and the product on the inside is a good product, but when you take a sip of the product, you're like, I don't want another sip of that. And I have a growing concern for our church that in many cases, that when people get close to what is happening here, that there's an ingredient that is missing. Let me explain it like this. So last week, 2 weeks ago, I had one of my mentors come to our church and I asked him to do a secret shopper deal. So businesses do this. Churches can do it too. So he comes in and he does this thing, and he's the guy that actually helped us in the beginning start our first church when we were in grad school. So a lot of what I know I've learned from him. And he does this thing where he walks through the lobby of a church, seeing if anybody will interact with him. So he comes in, and I'm at the hub at North San Jose, and I can see him, and I'm interacting with guests because everybody comes and talks to the pastor. Like, well, not everybody, but a lot of people do. And I'm watching people interact with me. But then I'm watching my mentor walk around the lobby at North San Jose, and he goes around the coffee, one, two, because I'm OCD, I got to do the full number, three times, and nobody says a thing to him. Nobody makes eye contact with him. Nobody walks over to say, hey, I've never seen you before. Nobody shakes his hand. It's like, he's there. And what if he had said, I'm going to give God one more chance before I take my life. And he came through our lobby and nobody engaged him. It's concerning to me. Now, I'm not like trying to make you feel guilty. I've led you there. I'm not going to say our people won't. I'm going to say I haven't led our church with this specific area to engage at a different level. The people that are right here, now the early church, they understood this. Let me show you what I mean. In Acts chapter 2, verse 42 through 47, there was something different about that church. And in the early days, it says this, that first few years after Jesus resurrected, there was a season where they were doing the things that Jesus had asked them to do. All the believers were devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship and sharing in meals, including the Lord's Supper and to prayer. There was something different about the way that they were operating. They were committed to each other. Verse 43, a deep sense of awe came over all of them, and the apostles performed many miraculous signs and wonders. How would you like that? Like you come to church on Sunday and somebody's blind and they walk out and they can see again. And somebody, you're starting to see all these amazing things happen. Miracles after miracles. God's doing great things. And verse 45, they sold their property and possessions and shared the money with those in need. And they worshiped together at the temple each day, met in homes for the Lord's Supper. We'll talk more about what that was. And shared their meals with great joy and generosity. Verse 47, all the while praising God and enjoying the goodwill of all the people. And each day the Lord added to their fellowship or their number or their church the number of people that were being saved. It was like they came in and they're like, man, something's different about these people. They love each other. They serve. They look one another in the eye. They empty their bank accounts to care for one another. They find people who are disconnected. They get them connected. They find people who are orphans and they bring them into families. They are all about loving and serving the people that are around them. There's something I got to be a part of that. How many of you want to be a part of something like that? That the love and the potency, that the closer you get to it, is so distinguishable that you're like, I don't have it. I may not believe what these people have, but I want the kind of love and concern that they have for one another. So here's the big idea. If we love the people inside of our halls that are right here, that's when it will echo beyond our walls. It's when we truly take responsibility for the people that are coming inside the doors of our church, every person that walks through a door, that we love them, that we care for them, we serve them. That's when the echo happens beyond our walls. Let's leave that up one more time because I think that that's so good that we might miss the significance of it. That the contrary would be true. If people come through our doors and there's no love and they walk out of our doors, it minimizes the ability of our church to influence those beyond our walls. Can I speak candidly with you today, church? Can I speak to you not like a concert, but like a family? Like this is a family talk as a brother or a father saying, sometimes our church is more like a concert than a family. You like the music, coffee's cool, People dress kind of cool. Some even wear skinny jeans. I like it. It's cool. But in reality, we walk in and we're not even engaging the people around. It's Silicon Valley. I got a lot going on. I got to go back home and catch the Niners and watch the other QB break his knee and lose again and be 1-4. I gotta do this thing. I got bills to pay. I got miles to feed. I have people I gotta take. I can't engage anybody. So we come in and we go out. And we come in and we go out and we don't engage the people inside the halls of our church. This is a problem. And I want to lead us to begin to change this problem. See, the early church understood there was a kind of love that was to be contagious. Well, here's the question. How do we actually love that way? How do we learn to serve the people that are around us the way the early church did? See, they understood something. They had been eye to eye with Jesus, and there were a lot of conversations that led to this foundation that when you got close, what you sipped was the real deal. And when you got close, what you sipped, it was full of love and it was full of kindness. And I believe that there was one conversation that Jesus had with his early followers that framed the way they saw church. And I want to look at that conversation today for a few moments. If you have a Bible, I want to encourage you to turn to John chapter 13 as we look at a setting right before Jesus is about to be crucified. And this little few verses of the Bible really does frame the way that Jesus wanted his followers to see their lives. And if you can imagine the scene, the first 12 chapters of the book of John, written by John, one of the early followers of Jesus, took about 3 years to get through. I mean, all the stories happened over a period of about 3 years, and the last 9 chapters happened over a period of about 2 weeks. So what happens is that time really decelerates. It slows down. And you see this interaction that Jesus has with his apostles, his early followers, that frames their mindset, because Jesus is about to go to a cross for the sins of the world. And how many of you know right before somebody dies, the things that they're talking about, they're not really concerned with the sports scores and they're not really concerned with their bank account balance. They're concerned with something entirely different. And Jesus is focusing his conversation on something that is so absolutely crucial. But he starts in an odd way, because they're going to have a meal together. It's called the Passover meal. And it was something that they had celebrated year after year as Israelites, as Jewish people. They would once a year have this big meal, and they're going to get together, and they're going, it's almost like Thanksgiving. But for them, they would have, instead of having turkey, they'd have lamb. And you can imagine the scene. They're in this upper room, and they walk in, and all the food's already set up. You can kind of smell the lamb as you get close. How many of you guys like lamb? Because just out of curiosity, remember my big fat Greek wedding? Remember that? You don't need meat? Oh, no problem. I give you lamb. It's the best meat. So you smell the lamb, and you walk in, and here's Jesus. He's prepared this meal for his early followers. And you have to understand that in this conversation, these are the 12 apostles. Now, Judas is going to betray Jesus, but the 11 who remain, these are the leaders of the church. That word apostle is not just like something you attach to somebody in a movie or a TV show. It is like the name that Jesus gave to his early followers who would be the founders of the church. So not only is he shaping their belief system, but he's actually showing them how to lead and how to build the church, the foundation of the church. And so you get in, and here's this table, and you can imagine his 11 disciples. You got Matthew, you have John, you have the tax collector Matthew, you have James and John, the sons of Zebedee, you have Andrew, the first one who saw Jesus and brought his brother Peter. You have all these guys sitting around the table, and they get there, and maybe even some nameplates there, like where you're supposed to sit, and they sit down, and in their culture at this point, like, their feet were nasty. They didn't have Vans and shoes to cover their feet as they walked along the roads. They wear sandals, and sometimes even people walk around without shoes on, and they come in and they sit down at this table with their dirty, nasty feet. And there's this one role for the servant, and it's supposed to be the lowest person in the house would do this. The lowest person in the house would go over and get a basin and walk back and start to wash the nasty feet of the people sitting around this table. And the scripture says in verse 3 of John chapter 13 that Jesus, he knew that the Father had given him authority over everything. And Jesus knew that ultimately the plan from God was coming to fruition, that he had come from God and he would return to God. So he had a security about the authority that God had given to him. His identity was secure, so he could do the thing that he's about to do in John chapter 13. And what happens next is just mind-blowing. In verse 4, it says, so Jesus got up from the table. At this moment, they're like, what are you doing? We're about to eat some lamb, man. And here you are getting up in the middle of the meal, but he's going to do the thing that nobody would have expected him to do. And it says that he takes off his robe, he wrapped a towel around his waist, and he starts to pour water in the basin. Can you hear that? That water that is just pouring down into this basin. Here they are sitting, and he begins to do the unthinkable, and he goes around the table one by one, and he begins to wash the feet of these disciples. And what's just kind of crazy to think about is, like, here's Judas, the guy that in just a few minutes for 30 pieces of silver is going to betray Jesus, and he still gets down and washes his feet, and he looks at Peter, and he knows that Peter's going to deny him three times. He washes his feet. He goes around the circle and washes every one of his disciples' feet. It's just unbelievable. He takes the position of a servant, the lowest position in the household. And it's amazing because the story ensues, and we don't have time to get into it because, like, Peter says some weird stuff. This guy, if you follow some of the teachings of Jesus, you know, like, he says a lot of stupid things and asks Jesus to wash his whole body, and this is kind of some weird stuff. He's putting his foot in his mouth. But then Judas leaves, walks out, and time slows down. And it's almost like we get a snapshot into the conversations that they would have been having for 3 years. How many of you would love to just have some YouTube videos of Jesus in these conversations? We get a little snapshot right now. Just imagine Jesus looking into the eyes of these followers. I want you to get this, guys. There's something I need to tell you. Like, you've seen me do a lot of things. You're about to watch something that happened that's going to blow your mind when I go to a cross. But, man, I need you to get this. If you don't get anything else, this is the thing that I want you to hear. In verse 33, watch what he says. He says, I'll only be with you a little while longer. Jesus told them, dear children, I'll only be with you. As I told the Jewish leaders, you will search for me, but you can't come where I'm going. Now, what is Jesus saying at this point? He's not simply saying, I'm going back to my Father in heaven. He's pointing out the fact that he's about to go to a cross to pay for the sins of the world, and nobody else is ever going to have that responsibility. I'll ask you to sacrifice. I'll ask you to serve. I'll ask you to give up yourself, but you will never do the thing that I'm doing right now to pay for the sins of the world. You can't go there. That's my job. Jesus, being the perfect Son of God, he was the only one that could pay the price so that we could be restored back to the heart of God. Where I'm going, you cannot go. In verse 34, so now, with this in mind, I'm giving you a new commandment. Can we all say that together? A new commandment. This commandment was different than the other commandments, not because he had never taught anything about this before and not because the subject had never come up, but it was because in the new covenant that Jesus was establishing, there was this old covenant. We looked a lot over the last series in TechWise Family about this old covenant between God and his people. But now he's giving us a new covenant where he's fulfilling all these laws that the Israelites had to live under. And no longer are they going to have to live under all these laws every single day this way. But there's this one thing that really is at the heart of the message of Jesus, that if you don't remember anything else, when you wake up every day, this is a thing that I want to be at the forefront of your mind. This is a thing that I want to be on your heart. This is really what I want for my people. He says, I'm giving you a new commandment. You're ready for it. It's the one thing. It's a thing that you must not forget. And is this, is that you would love each other. That's real novel. You're like, give me something bigger. Change the world. You know, make it echo beyond the walls. And Jesus is like, no, if you don't, hospitality starts at home. And if you're not loving each other within the walls of the house, it's never going to change the community. If you're not loving the person across the table from you, if you're not loving the person on your echo team, if you're not caring for the person in the group, the echo group you're in, it's never going to change the community. And for thousands of years, we've struggled with this. I mean, you go back to Genesis chapter 3, Cain, you know, he kills Abel because it was all about this worship war. He kills Abel, and we've struggled with it from the beginning of time. Those of you who have kids, anybody have kids? You don't have to teach your kids to fight. You don't. You have to teach them to get along. And Jesus says, the whole focus of my people who've been transformed by me is that you would love one another. And by this, get this, by this, the whole world will know that you are mine. This will prove to the world that you are my disciples. Not by how great you can preach, not by like how many awesome events you can do in the community, not by can you get a cool t-shirt and everybody notice the church and the mayor, no, all that's great, that's great. But if you don't love each other, then you miss the whole point. Do we love one another? He's saying if we do, it will change the world around us. By this, the whole world will know that you're my disciples. How many of you feel a little bit bad right now? Just out of curiosity, this church, you can be honest. It's okay, three honest people, the rest of you, you're like, I got this together. Awesome. I know how to love everybody. That's cool. Well, I wonder, like, what this actually looks like. Because sometimes you read something like this, you're like, okay, I need to love people. I got to get it. But what do you do on Monday? I want to give you three choices that you can make this week to help us live out this commandment that Jesus gives. The first one is this. I want to encourage you to take a long, loving look at the evidence of your life. And I had in my notes, take a hard look at the evidence. That was actually in my notes this morning. And I changed it because I was like, you know what? Actually, it's a long, loving look at the reality of our lives. Remember what Jesus said? The same way I have done what? All three of our campuses, the same way I have loved you, you must love one another. He's saying, look at what I just did. The way I washed your feet, the way I'm about to serve you and sacrifice. I'm not going to ask you to pay for the world's sin, but I am going to ask you to put down your comfort, put down your ease of life to serve the people around you. But it's my love. It's the more you understand how deeply you're loved by me, the more you're completely able to love those around you. It's not guilt. It's not pressure. It's that the more we understand the perfection of his love, that he doesn't ask us to come to him having it all together. He's a good, good father, like we sing these songs. He's perfect in all of his ways towards us. He knows your brokenness. He knows your secrets, but he loves you. And the more you take a long, loving look at the reality of how much he loves you, the more you're free to love the people around you. And I wonder, here's a question. If you were on trial for being a follower of Jesus, would there be enough evidence of love? Would there be enough love to convict you? Like if something happened this week and it was illegal to be a Christian in our country, and we're all gathered in a room, and there's this trial for all of us, and the only evidence that would make us be convicted as being a follower of Jesus were love, would there be enough love? Man, that's hard for me. Because like when I look at the last week of my life, sometimes I don't see quite as much love as I want, and I think as God wants. This last week I was out at my backyard, and when I say backyard, I mean like 5x10. And I'm like you know, I have not much yard. I have a tree at my house. And part of my tension I feel at this season of life is how do I actually get stuff done with three kids and have a lot of responsibilities like you. And there are a lot of personal things that are hard for me to get to. So I find windows to get them done. And how many of you are like more task-oriented than people-oriented? Just out of curiosity, we can relate to each other. Like, I'm extroverted, but I'm a lot more like amiable when my stuff is done. You know what I'm saying? My work's done, now let's have a conversation. Or let's have a conversation while we work. So I had like an hour window. We hung out for my son's basketball game afterwards. We were going to the park with some friends to hang out again with people. You know what I'm saying? People everywhere, and I'm going to get some stuff done, and I'm going to trim my tree in the back. So I go in the garage and I grab, you know, those big old clippers. And, you know, in our HOA, they're supposed to trim the trees, but they never do. So, you know, it just looks like somebody hadn't cut their hair for like 5 years. But it's just like, boom, like that. So my tree, my one tree, is like this. And I go and get the clippers. I start clipping. And then a neighbor walks by, which is cool. But I only have about an hour to trim my tree. I'm halfway up the tree. I'm like, what do I do at this point? Do I finish the tree and just act like, hey, neighbor, and just keep going? Or do I put the clippers down? So he comes over, and I look for a third alternative. So I'm like standing there with the clippers like this, you know, those big, you know, like this, straight at him, just hope he gets the point. But I'm standing there, and I sense God saying, put down the clippers. Like, engage your neighbor. And I got this internal tension. I got a tree that looks like somebody with half of a haircut, and there's an opportunity to love in that moment. What are you going to do when the two collide? I have to be willing to wrestle through what's happening in my heart with a long, loving look at what is really inside of me. And in reality, God's not going to hold me accountable for how beautiful my tree is. God is way more, and now, not that you never trim trees and work doesn't matter to God, all that. That's not my point. But at the end of the day, what's most important to God is how we love each other. If we don't get that, we miss the whole point. The end of the day, Jesus says, by this, the whole world will know you are mine, by the way you love one another. And the second part of this for me that really has been challenging to me or helping me is to identify and acknowledge your excuse. Because you and I have one. We all do. I'll give you my three. And if you like them, you can just take them. Or you can add your own excuse. But the first one is I got too much going on. Busy, things to do, mouths to feed, football games to watch. I got too much going on. And at the end of the day, we all feel busy. We need to get on with it. Second one for me is that's somebody else's problem. And that's a problem. You know, how many of you feel that when you're like, you see the trash in our city or you see the homelessness in our area? You're like, somebody should be doing something about that. You ever said that before? Just out of curiosity? All right. I'm honest. How about you? Or I'm being honest, is what I should say. Somebody else should take care of that. Third one is I don't know where to start. So what do? I see a problem in my family. I see a problem in my city. Where do I start? So these three things can really prevent us from loving people right around us because we get numbed in our mind with all this information and all these excuses. It may feel awkward to talk to somebody. It may feel weird to look somebody in the eye, to ask how they're doing. It's a lot more comfortable just to have your phone out, to not engage and not love the people that are right there in front of us. So this week, I walk by a homeless encampment. I do a prayer walk in the morning. I walk by this homeless encampment. And every day I walk by to pray for these people. And then I'm also praying that they don't think I'm crazy because I'm praying out loud. And I don't want them to think I'm talking to myself. But I kind of am praying and talking to myself at the same time. So I go by this homeless encampment and I sense God like leading me to go do something to love and serve them. So I got this vision of like making a meal for them, which I've never made anything aside from grilled cheese and peanut butter and jelly my entire life. So I'm like envisioning me making a meal, but I'm like, when am I going to make a meal for them? How am I going to do this? So for like 2 weeks, I'd walk by. I feel guilty every time I walk by. And so finally, I sense God saying, just take them some water. That's enough. Just do something small. And just show them that you see them and that you care. So one day I had about a 30-minute window, and I'm like, this is my chance to take them some water. So I go in our closet. I get like 12 waters because that's the number of disciples. And I'm going to go down and give them some water. And I invite two of my kids to go with me because I'm like, this is going to be an amazing moment right here. Like I'm going to walk in there with the water. There are going to be like hundreds of homeless people that come out. I'm going to say, not only do I have water, but living water. And Jesus can heal your soul. They're all going to make a decision to follow Jesus. And it's going to be like something I write about in a book. And it's going to get published on the news. It's going to be amazing. So I go down there. And while I'm walking down, two kids who are with me fight the whole way. So by the time I'm there, I'm like, what am I going to do? I try to stop their fight. They won't stop. I warn them. I count to five, you know, all these things. So finally, I grab my daughter's hand. I'm like, you will get along with your brother. Or you will hold my hand the whole way there. And I'm squeezing her hand. She's crying. So homeless people are like there inside their tents here. And they're like, what is this? So I get real close. And I'm like, again, I'm just expecting them to come out. And like, here, somebody's got some water for me. And I'm like, hey, anybody home? Nobody. Hey, I got water for you. Nobody. Hey, partly because my daughter's screaming. Maybe they don't want to come out. But finally, about 3 to 5 minutes later, this girl comes out. Her name is Melody. She's about 22, 23 years old. All of her teeth are gone. She's got scars all over her arms. She can't look me in the eye. And I'm like, anybody ever told you God love you? I'm like, here's the moment right here. She's going to receive Jesus. And she's like, no, nobody told me. Nobody's ever told me. Nobody's ever told me God loved me. And she cannot look me in the eye. I look at her eye, she looks away. And I just say, hey, there's a God that knows you and sees you, and he just led me to do something just to bless you today. So here's some free water. And about this time, Fernando comes out. And Fernando's like 6'4", big dude. I'm like, it's over for me. Somebody call Stacy, tell her, you know, I love her. And this guy comes out, and I'm expecting something's climactic is going to happen. He just goes like this, fist bumps, like give him some water. And he's like, can I have the rest of them? Sure, you can have them all. And it was just so anticlimactic. And I'm like looking at my kids. I'm like, all right, well, I guess that's what I was supposed to do. And I walk out, and I'm like, God, I thought something was supposed to happen in that moment. And I sense God in the still small, gracious way say, Andy, that was way more about you than it was them. That was way more about what I'm trying to form in you, that I'm trying to make you into a person of love that just takes a small step. See, sometimes you get so guilty, you feel so bad, I don't know what to do next, I don't know how to serve. And in reality, it's just a still small little step towards loving people around you. So that's the final thing. You got to be willing to take the first step. And sometimes it's just, hey, I see you. Hey, what's your name? Hey, how was your week? Really? I see you. Hey, how can I pray for you? Not like next week I put it on a list and I don't pray for you. How can I pray for you right now? How can I serve next to you on a dream team and not just like tell you what you got to get done, but actually care about what's happening in your life? See, I'm so concerned for our church. I'm so concerned for us that we do our stuff, but we don't actually know how to love the people right around us. And if the love is not happening inside the walls of our church, it's not going to echo out beyond the walls. And God is calling us to this place where we would actually be the kind of, there once was a day where people truly loved each other in the church. There once was a day where people were more concerned with the people around them rather than their own comfort. Where followers of Jesus understood that it wasn't just about consuming, it was about contributing with their life and making a difference. And God is bringing us as a church to be that kind of people, that we don't just consume, but we look around and see the people in us. There is somebody in our church or that will walk through the doors of our church and they're trying to decide today if they're going to go home and they're going to take their life and they're here for one last moment. Are we the kind of people that will love, that will notice the people around us? That's what I want to call you to. I want to call you with us to be a church of love, to be the kind of people. So here's some things that you can do. And get real practical with you. One thing you can do is if you've been coming to this church and you've never taken a step to engage, you can go through what we call Grow Track. This week in Grow Track, we talk about how to echo with the one life that God has given to you. Each week, we talk about different steps. This week, at all of our campuses, we're hosting Grow Track. You can go through. If you've never gone through and take a step to get on a team and make that decision. In just a moment, I'll lead you through how you can do that. Another thing that you can do is if you're new to Echo, next week at all of our campuses, we're hosting an event. We call it Newcomers Reception. You can take the step to actually hear about our vision and our values and how you can get connected rather than this just being a place you come, but being at a group of people that you do life with. We lock arms to make a difference in our community and love each other the way that God loved us. Now, let me give you one just final thought to wrestle through because, again, I want to put it on the bottom shelf. Here's a question. Here's a way to think about it. Choose each day one way to add value where you live, work, and play. That's what I want to encourage you to do. So Jesus said to his disciples, leave it up for a few minutes. Jesus said to his disciples, as you are going, make disciples of all nations. That's what the Great Commission was that he gave to his followers. That meant that everywhere you go, you work, you play, you live, is to find creative ways to add value to the people around you. It might be pouring a cup of coffee. It might be asking a question. It might be making eye contact. It might be getting a name. It might be shaking a hand. It might be serving your spouse. It might be loving the person in your Echo group. One way, everywhere you go, where you live, work, and play, to add value rather than just to take. If we all did that, just that one thing this week, there would be limitless impact. And I think this is what would happen. This last question. What if we were known as being the most friendly people in place in the entire Bay Area? Then when people got close, there was just something about the love that we have for one another that translates into impacting individual lives. That's the kind of church that there is no force on the planet that can stop it. That's what God is calling us to. How many of you guys want that? How many of you guys want to be a part of a church, of a place that loves, that cares for, that serves? So I want to just call you to action. If you pull out your connection card, all of our campuses, pull it out real quick. And we do this every week. And on the front, there's a place where you can indicate your name, more about yourself, how you heard about us. If you're a regular, you know the drill. But if you flip it over on the back, there's a place where you can tell us the next steps that you're taking today. And I want to slow down just for a moment because in about 2 minutes, there are going to be some guys that come around and women that come around with some buckets and you could drop this in. But what is your next step today in response to today's message? Maybe for some of you, it's to be a follower of Jesus. Others, it's to get baptized. One that I want to just really highlight is the decision to go through our newcomers reception where you will hear about the vision and values. If you've never taken that step, next week, just write on there, newcomers reception, and we want to help you get connected into the life of this church. Or maybe there's some other specific thing that you're going to do in response to today's message. We can all add value wherever we go, regardless of our spiritual maturity. We can take the effort and make the decision to find people around us that we can love and serve. One place, maybe it's your work, maybe it's your sports team, maybe it's your school, but just to say today, I'm gonna make a decision with my life to become not a consumer, but a contributor, to open up my hands. Jesus said, the way that I have loved you, love each other. And if we love the people within our halls, it's going to change and transform the community beyond our walls. Let's pray together. God, thank you so much for this church that you so deeply love. And every person watching online, every person joining at all of our campuses, we're grateful today for your kindness and your mercy. And we're grateful for the way that you loved us enough to die on a cross, conquer the grave, and now you call us to live out that love. Help us be that kind of church, that kind of people that we love. We add value wherever we live, work, and play. In Jesus' name we pray, and all of God's people say, amen.